WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Ozzy Konez with your WSLR news headlines for Tuesday, March 17th. For the third time this year, the entire island of Cuba was without power yesterday. The country has been struggling with an energy crisis since the United States in January threatened sanctions on any country that supplies oil to Cuba. Officials confirmed that island-wide, around 11 million people were without power on Monday. The Ministry of Energy and Mines talked about a complete disconnection of the power grid. It said all power plants were running normally when the grid collapsed. The electricity director, Lazaro Guerra, told state media that power must be gradually restored to avoid setbacks. Because the system is weak, it is prone to collapse. Cuba's dated grid has significantly degraded in recent years, and daily outages have caused residents to consider leaving the island. Michael King is set to be executed for killing a Sarasota County mother. This happens more than 17 years after the crime was committed in January of 2008. According to the Sarasota Herald Tribune, this case triggered changes to 911 dispatch training and the founding of the Denise Amber Lee Foundation with the mission of achieving better dispatch training. The state of Florida set a record in 2025 with 19 executions, and in 2026 the state is on track to match or surpass that number. The acceleration has drawn criticism from death penalty opponents and members of the U.S. Supreme Court. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis still has his eyes on easing vaccine requirements, even as measles cases continue to rise. The 2026 regular session, which ended Friday, was DeSantis' last as governor, but he still has opportunities in the special sessions to set policy as he exits office. The governor was quoted saying, "There's more than one way to skin the cat on some of this stuff," implying he is still driven to working towards his commitments. Ultimately, the Senate passed its version of the Medical Freedom Measure. This bill allowed ivermectin to be sold by Florida pharmacists, a permanent ban on mandates for any mRNA-based vaccines, and establishing in statute a non-medical exemption from immunization requirements for school children based on a parent's conscience. This has been Ozzy Konez with your WSLR News headlines for Tuesday, March 17th.
All happening in your backyard. Coming up on Thursday, New College began cutting trees on the island's Bayfront Preserve to make field and volleyball courts. Anxious neighbors scrambled, and a couple of hours ago, we managed to have the city of Sarasota intervene. We have the details.
I have the mics on. You are listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WEPV. WBPV 100.1 FM in Bradenton.
This is show 82 of our changing environment. The previous show was Melody Matrix, hosted by Neil.
I'm Julie Morris.
I'm John O'Miller, and the show is being recorded and broadcast on March 17th. Joe, we've got a background noise.
Right.
Okay.
I've got the mic sig off.
Well, there's a lot of sound leaking from somewhere. So what do we do?
I don't know.
All right. You keep reading, and I'll go look for somebody.
I'm Jalen Miller, and this show is being recorded and broadcast on March 17th, 2026. Today we're going to be talking with Aiden Stockdale, Manatee County Natural Resources Manager of their Education and Volunteer Division. The views and opinions expressed by hosts
Hold on, folks, we're trying to solve this.
Thursday morning, as surveyors were staking out the
What's...
Is it your computer? Your,
no, I don't think...
Like your phone. Phone.
Oh, could be this. Hold on. Thank you. Sorry. All right, we're back. Nope. All right. Carry on, Julie, wherever you left off.
You were just about to say, I'm John O'Miller, and this show is being recorded on and broadcast on March 17th.
Okay, go ahead.
Today, we're going to be talking with Aiden Stockdale, Manatee County Natural Resources Manager of their Education and Volunteer Division.
The views and opinions expressed by hosts, guests, and callers on WSLR programs are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR, its staff, or volunteers.
Aiden, our show frequently focuses on Sarasota County, so it's great to have you here to let us know about some of the things happening in Manatee County. Let's start with some fresh news about two significant conservation easements. What can you tell us about them?
Absolutely. Well, good morning, everybody. So we are in the process of pursuing two fairly large conservation easements under the Environmental Lands Program. So the first of which is Mossy Island, which totals about 437 acres. And then the second is Thunder Cloud Ranch, which is 1,124 acres. So conservation easements, they're a little bit different than a lot of how you'd see environmental lands acquired. So we have two processes. When you have what you think of as one of your standard nature preserves, you'll have what we call fee simple acquisition. We buy the property outright. The other tool that we use to conserve land is a conservation easement. This is where the owner of the property, the ranch, the farm, maintains ownership of the property, but they sell the development rights for it. So that's what we're doing in this situation for both of these properties. They'll continue to be working ranches, working farms, but they won't be able to come back and further develop the properties.
Right. And so a couple of things about conservation easements that I don't think get discussed enough. First has to do with some work that, you know, is linked to someone who lives in Sarasota sometimes, Reed Noss. And it has to do with sort of a theory of how you protect important environmental areas. And that is that you would have a core that was your best protected area, and then it would be surrounded by buffers of other land uses. So, for instance, with Myakka River State Park, it's not great when we have intense residential development right next to a state park. It would be ideal if there was some transitional buffer habitat, like a ranch, that served to protect the core area that you're interested in protecting. And so is it Mossy Island?
Mossy Island, yes.
Yeah, so the Mossy Island Ranch, it butts right up against Myakka State Park. So even if something ultimately were to be developed on the eastern side of that ranch, Myakka Park itself would still be buffered. Now, it's tempting sometimes to go ahead and acquire land fee simple next to the park, but then you have the need to get an additional buffer, and you know, it keeps expanding outward. So right now, Myakka Park is fairly well buffered. There are some areas that adjacent to it that are not buffered, but this is a great thing to have. And the other thing about conservation easements is if the owners of Mossy Island Ranch eventually decide they want to do something different, they want to sell the ranch or they need to sell it, it won't be sold for development. And so that means either another person interested in ranching could step in and acquire it and keep managing it in a similar manner, or the county or the state or some other interest could say, well, this would be a valuable addition to Myakka River State Park, and we're going to go ahead and pay for the remaining rights to the property. So those are two aspects of conservation easements that I don't think get enough airplay.
Also, the landowner owns is responsible for the management of the property.
Right, and they keep paying taxes. There are a number of benefits, but some of those are frequently listed or enumerated as advantages of easements, and not so much the important buffering role and the fact that it leaves open the potential that land could be better protected in the future.
And also, in terms of if you're thinking corridors and connectivity, you mentioned buffering, but also those pieces that connect from one large green space to another.
Right. You know,
we're not going to get corridors without conservation easements.
Right. Yeah. So, good work. So, what remains in that process for those two easements to go through?
It's negotiations.
Okay.
So it's contracts and all that. But
is there agreement on price at this point?
Yes.
Okay.
So, all right. It's just the fine details. All the processes.
Yeah,
behind
these
the scenes.
These take a while, and that's a challenge for government acquiring property. Is they frequently can't move as rapidly as an individual buyer could, and sometimes that results in properties not being protected.
That's kind of the biggest challenge of the Environmental Lands Program is that we require somebody who's willing to sell to the government and willing to sit through that process. It does take a lot of time. It does take a lot of work to kind of hammer out all the details. And the government's never going to pay as much as, say, another developer, right?
Well, that's what I would say is the biggest challenge we're facing in Sarasota is the expectations of the landowner. And Sarasota County is only going to be able to offer what independent appraisals can justify, and a speculator can pay more than what's justifiable. I've been known to say Sarasota's never paid too much for a property. We may have paid a few years too soon, but the 100 sites we've purchased through the Environmentally Sensitive Lands Program in Sarasota County, when we look back at what we were paying, we now look like real estate geniuses, because some of that land we were buying for $5,000 an acre, and there isn't any of that anymore.
One of the tools that we have is that our process involves multiple appraisals, so we are kind of able to look at appraisals from different points of view and kind of meet in the middle, and that does give us a little bit more leverage in terms of some of the processes we had in the past, where it's what's the lowest value of this land? Okay, well, if you're not building houses on it, you can only use it as agriculture, and that really hamstringed us in the past. We feel like, okay, somebody could build 400 houses on this, and it's worth this price. But if you can't build 400 houses on it, then it's only worth this much, and that's what the government's allowed to pay. And that's a lot less if you're only considering it for agricultural use.
And so that puts landowners sometimes in a position where they want to hold out because they think ultimately they could get their property either in the future land use plan or the zoning to have greater capacity for development.
Right.
And something we've been seeing in Sarasota is Sarasota County planning for ways land could be developed, but not planning for ways it could be protected. So if you have a plan that shows a new road going through a parcel, that's some entity within local government anticipating development, but there's not another office somewhere that's planning on how it's going to be protected.
Yeah, the state has kind of a list of desirable properties, but in terms of what we plan on getting, we don't, beyond kind of what's in the existing dashboard of stuff we're actively pursuing, it's kind of hard to say, oh, we want that property. It would be nice to have. There's kind of a state list, but really we're kind of narrowed down to what we have currently on our environmental lands dashboard.
Well, so you've mentioned dashboard twice, and a dashboard is a word that doesn't come up here in Sarasota when we're talking about land protection. So I've been very impressed. Up in Manatee County, they have an environmental lands candidate property dashboard, and any citizen can go on and look at what properties they're currently being considered. Now, my understanding is that properties only show up there if the landowner agrees to have them depicted.
Correct. Yeah, so there's some behind-the-scenes work. So mm-hmm. any citizen, any person, any landowner can nominate a property.
Right. They could be from a foreign country.
Could yeah. be anybody.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the kickoff process. They can go to the Manatee County website, look at the Environmental Lands Program and nominate any property. And then from there, staff will take a look at it. What's the quality of the property, the habitat, the water protection, and most importantly, is there a willing seller? So we'll do a little bit of background research. Is this a viable thing?
Right.
And then does the person want to sell?
And the willing seller concept, I think, gets easily misconstrued in here in Sarasota anyway. Willing seller doesn't mean that the property is on the market.
Correct.
It's like you're not getting married. You're just going to a dance together. Is the owner willing to enter into discussions about the potential for either selling all or some of the rights? That's really different than it being listed and, you know, everyone being aware that the property is on the market. So it's good to identify properties before they're on the market. And it's important to stay in touch with landowners and, you know, develop a relationship so that they understand if their property is valuable from a public perspective, that there may be a program and dollars that would enable them to keep their land in a state they're used to rather than seeing it intensified, and intensified for any purpose. I know we always assume that the intensification is going to be for residential development, but it could be for a solar array. It could be for more intensive agriculture. It could be for anything that diminishes the environmental value of the site and increases the intensity of use.
With the properties we acquire, you know, that's keeping, not necessarily status quo, but keeping space available that's set aside for us and future generations is kind of the goal here. If you don't protect stuff, it will eventually all get developed. That's the ultimate, you know, if we don't have a plan, we don't intend to set stuff aside, then somebody can build on it generally, you know.
Well, I think John Lambie's formulation is if we keep going the way we're going, we're likely to end up where we're headed.
So, Aiden, let's talk about your role as the Manatee County Natural Resources Manager of Education and Volunteers.
Absolutely. So what we try to do at Manatee County Natural Resources is provide access to the outdoors and environmental education to both residents and visitors to the area. So our goal is to get people to appreciate the outdoors. People don't protect things they don't understand, and they don't protect things that they don't care about. So we really strive to move people from, you know, I don't even know what's out there in my own backyard, to, oh, that's really cool, and then, oh, that's really cool, and I care about it. And so we do anything, you know, wild ideas out of the box to get people to just get outside or bring outside to them. So we do hikes, kayak trips, you know, some of your standard stuff, but we also take programs to homeowners associations. We go out to library programs. We'll meet people in the community. We'll take things like skulls and feathers and furs out to neighborhood parks and catch people as they're just, you know, playing with their kids and, you know, be like, hey, here's some cool things that happen around you and here's some other ways to get outside. So we partner with many organizations. We partner with, you know, other groups. We have people to come to us. But anything that we can do to get people interested in the outdoors, that's really where we aim to be.
And that's a mix of volunteers and paid staff?
Yes. So we have a fairly small team. We have four education staff and then myself and two other people that kind of assist with the program in terms of like signage and volunteer management and stuff like that. So it's a pretty small crew, and that crew moves across about 30,000 different acres. So we have 12 publicly accessible parks and a handful of others that are kind of, you know, paddle up sites and stuff like that. But we do all of the education for all of those properties. And so we rove around one to another. We kind of do them in rotation. We target stuff that's important in terms of interesting features, but also visitation. So the preserves that have more visitation, obviously we focus more because that's where the people are already going. But yeah, so we do that. We have a handful of volunteers that offer some additional programs as well. And we also do some contracted and partner programs as well.
So you mentioned skulls and feathers, but what are some of the different techniques you use on different sites to educate visitors?
Sure. So we like to call this field interpretation. So we think of it like translation, right? You're translating what nature and the environment means into a language that's understandable by the people attending. And so there's many different aspects of interpreting our natural resources. That can be storytelling, that can be playing games, you know, that can be just doing observation. It can be recreational stuff. It can be making art, journaling. And so there's various different ways to get people to observe and interact with their environment around them.
And so what are the most visited parks in Manatee County?
The number one would be Robinson Preserve. Very, very easily, anywhere between, I know old counts were over 300,000 people a year, and I would guess probably 500,000 people a year easily visit Robinson Preserve. Right now, spring break, you know, I have a hard time finding a parking spot. So we're certainly a destination site in terms of, you know, open air, walking paths, kayaking trails. So that's going to be the number one. Emerson Point in Palmetto is fairly close behind. And then probably the third most popular would be Rye Preserve out in Parrish.
Mm-hmm. So I haven't thought about it much, but it seems like there's sort of two different classes of helping people understand the environment. One is when there's an actual interpreter there, a person who's explaining or guiding or discussing things. And the other is when someone's on a site by themselves and they are sort of have to rely either on brochures, maps, signage, signs, kiosks, or whatever. So talk a little bit about that aspect.
Yeah, so in terms of interpretation, you have what you do in person, like you mentioned, and then you have kind of your non-personal interpretation. So that's all your brochures, your signage. We do strive to have interpretive signage at, like I said, our more major preserves. So you'll see it at Emerson and you'll see it at Robinson. You'll see it at a few other sites. That is a thing. We actually have one of our staff members is dedicated to exhibits and signage. So it's kind of we pick one site at a time and we work on that. All of our sites do or are working towards an interpretive plan. So how we tell the story of that site, both the signage and what the educator or interpreter teaches there kind of all fits into that same message or story. So we will come up with a theme for a location. So for instance, you know, if we're talking about Emerson Point, there's a very long history, human history, indigenous people, and then later European settlers. So we're very history focused at Emerson Point. So all of the things that you see there will talk about people and human interaction with the land throughout time. And all the programs kind of reference back to that.
So Emerson Point is on the north shore of the Manatee River, or am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. And Robinson Preserve is on the south shore
of
the Manatee, River. Right.
Yep. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And we have a really unique situation in Manatee County because the entirety of the Manatee River lies within the bounds of the county. This is, I can't think of any other situation where there's a major river that the entirety of the river exists within one municipality. And so that's really where we've strived to put our conservation efforts is protecting the Manatee River Corridor. So we manage properties at the headwaters of the Manatee River. So that would be up near Duet Preserve, and then all the way out to the mouth, which would be Emerson Point and Robinson Preserve.
So historically, Sarasota would have been happy to have all of the Myakka watershed, but Manatee County insisted that that those four townships, you know, there's sort of a notch mm-hmm. in the eastern part of in Sarasota County, and Manatee County insisted that they stay with Manatee County. So you get all of the Manatee watershed, but only half of the Myakka watershed.
Yeah, well, Manatee's history goes back. I mean, if you look at the old maps, you know, Manatee was
giant
before it was kind of broken up into the counties it is today.
Well, and this is the thing. I mean, Manatee County, you've got like at least three rivers, right? You've got the Bradenton, the Manatee, and the Little Manatee.
Yeah, the Little Manatee.
And we only have one in Sarasota. So when it comes to river protection, all our focus has to be on the Myakka, and mm-hmm. Manatee County's attention gets distributed among three rivers.
So, Aidan, how does the science and interpretation go at Robinson and Emerson Point?
So, science interpretation. I hate to say that those are different things, but in terms of what we do as far as science, so we don't have a lot of active research that we do on the preserves. Robinson is kind of an exception. So recently, and I say recently, but this dates back to 2018, we expanded Robinson Preserve. So we added an additional 150 acres, and then we worked with some state land and folded that in as well. And so Robinson Preserve got bigger. But the land that we acquired at Robinson was farmland. And this happens a lot. A lot of what we do is restoration. It's not conservation, which is a separate interesting point. But what we were doing on the property is bringing it back to a natural state. Maybe not necessarily the exact historical state it was, but a decent natural state that supports the local environment. And one of the things we were targeting with the restoration, one of our restoration goals, was improvement of habitat for fish. So we were able to get some grant funding. There's grant funding for sport fish because it's economically viable and people are interested in things that are economically viable. And it turns out when you protect sport fish, there's a lot of other smaller fish and environmental concerns that you can kind of fold in under that umbrella. So it works for us. And we were able to pursue some funding and work with partners. And so we are working with the state, FWC, Fish and Wildlife, and Moat Marine, and some other partners to monitor juvenile fish within Robinson Preserve. This involves tagging and a series of monitors throughout the preserve and all the way out to Tampa Bay. And they are monitoring the migration of fish both through the preserve and then eventually, as they get older, out into Tampa Bay. So we're able to use that over time to keep an eye on how the habitat improvements are working and where we still have challenges. And we've definitely been able to see we created some fish passages that go under the trails. We noticed that they were being underused. So that was one of the areas we revisited, and we installed basically larger culverts because the fish weren't using the smaller culverts that we had originally planned. So we're able to, like, look at the property, look how the habitat improvements are working or maybe not, and what we can do to improve them. And then, you know, that's the science side of things. And then my turn comes in after that, and I get to work with people. I get to bring them out while the scientists are out there. So, you know, Moat or FWC might be out there pulling 30-foot seine nets. And so I have a class of students out there, and we're kind of alongside seeing what they're doing, what they're pulling. We show them some of the scientific equipment that they're using in the research, and the kids do some of that same sampling that they're doing for the official research, so they get a feel for the scientific method and learn what's going on. And they're kind of involved in the data collection, as it were.
So getting back to the interpretation, So do you use, is it mostly text, like panels with text or QR codes, or what are some of the things you use?
Yeah, in terms of signage, it's text and art or okay. historical photographs. We don't do a lot of digital media. I have personally found that the more technical you get with stuff, the more likely it is to break.
Yeah.
So we don't do a lot of that. We did produce a 50-part video series.
Wow.
In 2020, a lot of people were inside, so we transitioned a lot of our stuff online. So we produced a video series and put all of that on YouTube. So we do various lessons that like explore the preserves, that do nature related story times, experiments, and other lessons about like native wildlife. So we do have a digital component that was part of our digital outreach. But in terms of what you see in the preserves, mostly you're going to see signage. We do like to keep it low key. We really want people to enjoy, you know, the environment around them and not have a lot of that, you know, human element introduced to them, or at least, you know, there in a way that they don't really notice it.
You are listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV 100.1 FM in Bradenton. Today, we're talking with Aiden Stockdale, Manatee County Natural Resources Manager of their Education and Volunteer Division. The UF IFAS Extension of Sarasota County will host Clothing Swap to Save the Drops. Did you know it takes more than 2,000 gallons of water to produce one pair of jeans? This event hopes to raise awareness about the environmental impact of fast fashion and allow participants to reduce their environmental footprint while refreshing their wardrobe. Clothing Swap to Save the Drops will take place on Sunday, March 22nd from 2 to 4 p.m. at the UF IFAS Extension Office at Twin Lakes Park, 6600 Clark Road in Sarasota. Clothing items brought to the event should be clean. More information is available by calling 941-861-5000.
So, Aiden, I've been doing natural history interpretation since I was 10 or 11. I used to stand on our back porch and sort of recite facts from the Golden Nature Guide for kids that were 6 or 7. And I've run into a concern or something I've observed. I want to read you something I put in my book and get your reaction to it. As with an obscure relative we've never met, we frequently know just one lingering hallmark story about a tree. Natives would pound the bark and put it in streams to stun fish, or the wood is so heavy it sinks, or it was deliberately introduced and then escaped cultivation and now is a big problem. And if you go on a nature walk with a naturalist, you'll likely be told one or two or three of these factoids about those plants the naturalist recognizes. Too many nature walks are an outdoor reception line, an introductory handshake followed by some pleasantries, speed dating the environment. As a result, most of what we know about a given tree species is typically a bouquet of aphorisms that reduce a complex plant to a few memorable talking points. So have you experienced that where a particular plant like a gumbo limbo or a kunti or something comes with two or three facts that everyone recites and never really get beyond that?
I think we... This is an ongoing challenge.
Okay.
We've kind of, not necessarily from a plant perspective, but just in general, how we as a society have shorter attention spans,
yeah.
Right? We want, you know, a quick and easy to digest message. So yeah, absolutely. You know, most of your one time only, you know, nature tours, hikes with a naturalist, you're definitely going to be like, oh, there's cool facts. I remember one or two of them. I like to look at that as the hook, though.
Okay.
I think that if nobody knows anything about the environment behind them, then learning the fact that gumbo limbos produce a sap that was used, you know, in South and Central America to capture birds. Like, that's a really cool thing.
Right.
That's the thing you lead them into the next thing. So that one or two factoids is always going to exist.
Yeah.
The question is how do you translate that into something?
Yeah, how do you go beyond that?
Right.
Yeah, it is a challenge and something I've struggled with.
I think one of the things that we end up doing is that if we can then capture those people as, say, volunteers, well, then they get more interested. They come to more programs. They learn a little bit more. You have deeper conversations.
Yeah. Well, and it's hard because to go deeper, to go to help people understand more, you have to learn more.
Right.
And so you have to start thinking, well, are these gumbo limbo trunks, are they photosynthetic? Maybe they don't need leaves all year round, you know, and start delving deeper into what's going on. So it's a challenge.
So anything else you want to share with our audience this morning, Aidan?
Yeah, so we, we started off on talking about some of those conservation properties under the Environmental Lands Program, and I want to say that's kind of been really a crowning success of what we've done. So that really dates back to 2020. We had a referendum, and I don't know, you know, if anybody's seen many political polls, but. That was a referendum that passed by 72% of voters, and I have seen very, very few things in politics that 72% of the population agrees on. So there's definitely a big desire by the population in the area to preserve land. So the will is there, right? And I think capitalizing on that wherever we can is important.
Well, let me just say, when we started our first, we've been buying land by referendum in Sarasota County for years, but they were always single subjects. Are we going to save North Lido? Are we going to save South Lido? Are we going to save the Philippi Estate or Casperson Beach or whatever? But when we first came up with the Environmentally Sensitive Land Protection Program and the referendum in 99, that first one passed by 65%. But when we had the follow-up referendum in 2005, that passed by 80%. And I agree with you. These are unusual numbers in these times. I'm hoping we can match that 80% or exceed it when we have our referendum here in November.
Which, what's that coming up for?
Well, the existing land acquisition or land protection program in Sarasota County sunsets in 2029. And so it's currently a program that the voters have approved in those two referenda that enables the county to tax up to $250,000on ad valorem property. And that goes into a fund to acquire and sort of and manage and get set up environmental properties. And so far, since 99, we've acquired 100 different parcels. Some of them are obviously get glued together and become a single site. But that's significant because it demonstrates that the county's been paying fair market value. When we passed it in 99, we specified that it would be a willing seller program. There would be no eminent domain or condemnation. And that meant we had no idea if we would acquire a single property. We might have had the citizens' authorization to spend money, but maybe nobody wanted to sell to us. So far we've acquired rights, either fee simple or conservation easements for 100 parcels. And that's, a demonstration, as I say, that we pay people a reasonable amount of money. So, yeah, it's going to be on the ballot on November 3rd on this year. And if it fails, we could try it again in 2028. But after that, the program will sunset. And it would be a shame because we've protected over 40,000 acres. And a majority of that, I think, is through conservation easement. So that's land that one way or another will be protected into the future. And as we said previously, people will be paying taxes on that, and the landowner will be managing it with some oversight to make sure that, you know, they're getting after the Kogan grass or whatever the issues are. So, yeah, we've got a big referendum coming up. We'll probably have more shows dealing with that in the future as it gets closer. I just want to say I've been really impressed with Manatee County's website related to your environmental land program, the whole dashboard idea that we talked about where citizens can go online and see what properties are being considered. You've got another site that's related where people can find their nearest community garden. They can find out how to vacate county interest in real property. They can nominate lands for the environmental land program. They can subscribe to a surplus property email. So if the county decides a property's surplus and is making it available for purchase, you can view the county surplus property. It's a really comprehensive opportunity for the public to understand public lands in Manatee County. And I'm hoping we can get Hannah Turbeville, who just came down from Manatee County to work for us here in Sarasota. I'm hoping we can get her to share some of that with the different advisory boards so they can be inspired by what's happening up in Manatee.
Yeah, we had a big push to redo the website relatively recently, and we kind of it was quite an overhaul because we definitely took a different approach to organizing information, which is, you know, a little in the weeds, but the main push for us was to organize things by service about what, you know, residents and businesses and people coming to the county were looking for. So hopefully it's a little bit easier to find stuff on the current website, but we were really trying to break up the, you have to know that the Natural Resources Department does this function in order to find where that function is, or that this is a community, you know, services or veterans services function. You have to, hopefully we've made it a little bit easier to group things by subject and service, so that you can see all the things about environmental lands in one place now.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Anything else that you would like to, is there a website where people can learn about Manatee County parks and preserves?
Yeah, absolutely. So the main listing of Manatee County preserves would be at mymanatee.org/naturalresources. They can also check out our eco events. So that is all of the education programs and tours that we offer. And we do on average about 50 different free public programs every month spread throughout the county. So there are a lot of opportunities to get outside, to explore, and to meet new people that might also be interested in some of those same things.
Yeah, go ahead.
So what about Duet Preserve?
Duet is probably my favorite preserve. So you're looking at about 20,000 acres of conservation land on the eastern side of Manatee County. So there's Duet proper, and then there's another preserve that we call the Headwaters at Duet. So that is the property that contains the north and the east fork of the Manatee River. And if, you know, the history of Duet is that it was originally all owned by phosphate mining companies. And geology of Florida, such as it is, we are a very rich in phosphate state. It's very profitable to mine in Florida if you're looking for phosphate. And the county was concerned because the Manatee River is where we get most of our drinking water from, at least all of our surficial waters. So being concerned about that, that was one of the first major acquisitions of environmental land that the county ever made. Was to protect, you know, that section of the Manatee River and protect our drinking water source.
And I hope you got the mineral rights.
I believe so.
Okay. So let's follow up on that theme. I mean, we've talked about some of the high-profile places that people would find out about from TripAdvisor or whatever. And I just want to go back. So Robinson Preserve is really on Tampa Bay, right?
You're on the edge, north of Tampa Bay.
All right. So, but let me follow up and say, what are some of the sites that are publicly accessible in Manatee County that don't get enough recognition that people would find really interesting that are, you know, not the high-profile ones we've already discussed?
So I would definitely start with Duet Preserve. It's, okay. First of all, it's the largest preserve in the entire system. It accounts for more than two-thirds of all the conservation property that we manage. Really neat site. It's got, you know, wetlands. It's got the river systems. It has a very large population of Florida scrub jays. Yet another research project. We're actually doing studies on the metagenetics and how we can basically save the population of this region's scrub jays. It's also been a great conservation story because that same population of scrub jays was expected to go extinct because there weren't enough breeding pairs. So we've been working with, you know, translocations and moving birds around and protecting the genetic viability of that group. So it's a cool site. There's lots of trails. It's very big, and it's the only preserve that you can really drive through. So if you're like a fan of that kind of safari experience or that off-trail experience, that's the place to visit. And beyond that, I mean, there's a lot of cool other sites. Perico Preserve,
yeah,
I think gets overlooked a lot. I am particularly fond of Perico Preserve because I got to see it turn from a farm field into what it is today as a conservation site. I got to see all those plants be put in the ground by elementary school students and, you know, high school volunteers and see them what they are today. That really has come a long way from being, you know, a patch of blackberry brambles to now being a beautiful site. You know, hundreds of different species of birds have been spotted there. Some great wetlands and the Little Rookery Islands.
And you can walk there from Robinson, right?
You can. So we were able to acquire a piece of property that connected the two.
Uh-huh.
So now there's a trail that connects both Perico and Robinson Preserve, and you can walk through the entire section.
That's great. We had a good show about Perico.
Yeah. And that was with Elliot Prout.
Yeah. Community Harvest SRQ will host their next community conversation on Thursday, March 26th. This edition of their monthly series, Eating Well with Gleaned Fifth Flavors, by Chef Rebecca Perineo. Attendees will explore the physical, emotional, and spiritual aspects of cooking with a discussion and demonstration on the ancient plant amaranth. Potluck begins at 6 p.m. The discussion is from 7:15 till 8:30 p.m. The event will take place at the Resilience Incubator located at 1760 Mound Street in Sarasota on the second floor. More information is available at communityharvestsrq.org.
So was there any damage from Helene to Emerson Point and Robinson Preserve?
Absolutely.
Was there?
So we absolutely... But, so we went underwater, more than 5 feet of storm surge across most of the property. There were benches picked up and moved, you know, half a mile away that we were pulling out of mangroves and stuff like that. Everything got hit pretty hard. The benefit of the natural areas is that they're designed to take that. So, yeah, we had a lot of trees come down. You know, power lines came down in areas. Some of the human infrastructure got damaged. The biggest impacts were, in fact, to one of the areas. We had a historic tree farm at Robinson called the Reasoner Tract. Those are all exotic species, but they're interesting, you know, examples of plants that were brought in 100 years ago. A lot of them didn't make it.
Oh.
That was we lost some very large banyan trees, unfortunately, at part of Robinson Preserve because they got, you know, hit by all that salt water. But in terms of the native habitats, they bounced back pretty well. And so mostly, you know, we spent a week or two clearing trails. Beyond that, you probably wouldn't notice. Trees fall back in the woods. We leave them. That's for their habitat for a lot of insects and birds to, you know, as things break down those logs, that's a whole new ecosystem. So you just let nature take its course in most of that, and it really, like, shows you that the system is resilient.
Yeah, the system knows how to bounce back from such things. So let me ask you this. In Sarasota, if you said NEST, people would think of the Neighborhood Environmental Stewardship Team, which is a group that goes out to neighborhoods and talks with them about their stormwater issues or what their, you know, their HOA could do to improve environmental values in the area. But NEST has a completely different meaning in Manatee County. So tell us about NEST.
That's true. So we have the Center for Nature Exploration, Science, and Technology. So that's our environmental classroom at Robinson Preserve. So we are there every Saturday morning with kind of an open house introduction to nature and the environment. We do kids' activities. We do game nights. We do recreational classes and stuff like that. So that's our environmental classroom at Robinson, and we use that as kind of a nature center, but it's really a modifiable space. So we bring in different exhibits, different activities and stuff all the time there. And so you'll see a lot of classes and activities going on at that at Robinson Preserve.
And am I remembering correctly that people have essentially kayak lockers at Robinson?
Yes, that is one of the – we have kayak storage tubes at both sections of Robinson Preserve. That's kind of a unique feature. So if you own an apartment or otherwise, you know, you don't want to be hauling your kayak around, and mostly you kayak out at Robinson Preserve, it's a pretty great deal. We rent the lockers out. People can store their kayaks there and able to take them out as they wish, you know, to go out on the trails and kayak through the preserve.
You know what the fee is?
It's $30 a month, but it's a one-year contract.
Interesting. So I don't think – I'm not aware of that in Sarasota. If we haven't, I haven't found out about it.
It's not a common program, but it has definitely caught on. I know a couple of the local HOAs and stuff that have waterfront access have actually approached us saying, like, hey, can we do something similar, build one on-site for our residents to rent and store their kayaks on-site.
Does Manatee County have any campgrounds that operates?
We do. So we manage two public campgrounds, let's say three. So we have a public campground at Rye Preserve. That's the most popular, open Friday and Saturday nights. We also have camping out at Duet Preserve. It's a little bit more primitive, a little bit more rustic, but it's definitely out there also Friday and Saturday nights. And then we have a group campground at Robinson Preserve. So when we were planning all of the amenities, getting grants, that was one of the amenities we like to offer. We went back and forth with the community, though. This is one of the things about conservation. It's always a conversation with the community. So we plan to have a campground there. And as kind of a compromise with the community, they didn't want people coming in camping all the time, no RVs, that sort of things. So what we have is a group campground. So if you have an organized group, a youth group, a scout group, things like that, you can apply for a permit to camp there at the site at Robinson Preserve. So we do allow some limited camping at that site as well.
But no RV camping?
No RV camping currently. Uh-huh. We are looking at improving the site at Rye Preserve to allow RV camping. And then we also are in the process of working on some ideas for paddle-up camping as well.
Oh, talk about – what is that? Paddle-up camping. Talk to me.
Yeah, so we are part of the Florida Circumnavigational Trail. Uh-huh. And so we have some areas that we are looking at improving to basically – you come – you know, you do have to get a permit ahead of time, but you apply for the permit. You'd come up on your boat, kayak, and you'd be able to camp on a site along the river somewhere.
Wow. I wrote an article once, I think – I don't know if it ever got printed, but it was sort of, what do you call someone who paddles from Tampa Bay to Charlotte Harbor? And the answer is an outlaw, because there's no designated, I guess you could go up Turtle Lagoon or whatever and camp at Turtle Beach Campground, but there's no provision. You know, if you're in the Everglades on the Wilderness mm-hmm. Waterway, they have those chickies, they have platforms, or they have some sites on the land. And so you can canoe the Wilderness Waterway. It's a 99-mile trail, and they've made it all possible. But if you wanted to canoe from Tampa Bay to Charlotte Harbor or kayak, no one's figured out how to do that legally.
Yeah, so we're looking at an area. We have at least one spot in Robinson Preserve, and then we also have, for instance, Pine Island might be a good option. Like I said, this is all still planning phases, but We are looking at some good options to be able to do that.
Tell us about Pine Island. Where is
Pine Island, which is an island that there are too many of them named the same way.
Yes, yes.
Right? So the Pine Island I am referencing is in the Braden River. So it's close to the boat ramp and where the – if you know where the Carlton Arms area is off of 64. And it is an island in the middle of the Braden River. This is another one that we actually just – did a environmental lands acquisition on, because we only owned about half the island, and we used the environmental lands program to buy the other half of the island. And it is an island in the middle of the Braden River. It's got a fair amount of upland on it, so it does have pine trees. It's mostly protected just to be protected. Uh-huh. You know, we do kayak trips out there, but there's not a lot of access. There's not really trails or anything. So it's mostly conservation for conservation's sake. But you can absolutely, if you got a kayak, you can go out there. There's a couple of landing spots and you can check it out and explore it.
And you're thinking about camping there?
As one of the possibilities, yeah.
So how would you handle the outhouse situation in a situation
like that? It definitely would be a pack it in, pack it out. So it would have to be.
I see.
Yeah.
So on the Wilderness Waterway, they have a vessel that comes through and pumps out, I guess they're holding tanks, and it has a route and a schedule and hits all of them in sequence.
I don't think we have a big enough.
Right. I don't think you do now, but if we were, you know, if Manatee and Sarasota were to coordinate.
Absolutely.
So that there were, look at the Jim Neville Preserve. They're doing a lot of restoration work there. That could be a campsite, mm-hmm. but you would need to have an outhouse of some sort. So doing one is totally unsustainable. But if there was a route, and it was like some of our bicycle routes and other things where people were coming down from Ohio to do this paddle, then it might be worth talking about a system that could be handled. So that would be interesting.
So there's two state parks in Manatee County, one on the Little Manatee River and another one on the Manatee River.
So there's Little Manatee River State Park, there's Lake Manatee State Park, and then also abutting Myakka River State Park mm-hmm. as well.
And then they have a federal facility.
Oh, we do have a it's part of the national park system, but it's a
DeSoto National
Memorial.
Right. There. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's that's kind of down the street from Robinson. That's really neat, being able to work with national park staff from time to time too.
All right. Well, you've been listening to Our Changing Environment on listener-sponsored WSLR LP Radio 96.5 FM, broadcasting from our downtown Sarasota studios on Kumquat Court. You can also hear our show on WBPV LP Radio 100.1 Bradenton, or listen online.
Today's show, number 82, featured Aiden Stockdale, Manatee County Natural Resources Manager of their Education and Volunteer Division.
The views and opinions expressed by hosts, guests, and callers on WSLR programs are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR, its staff, or volunteers.
Previous shows of Our Changing Environment may be accessed at the WSLR archives. Go to archive.wslr.org.
If you'd like to be notified about upcoming shows, you can join the Facebook group Our Changing Environment.
Tune in at 9 next week for the Healthy Living Hour with Rebecca Acosta.
And tune in at 9 a.m. 2 weeks from today on March 31st for the next episode of Our Changing Environment.
If you're interested in local public affairs, tune in every Thursday at 9 a.m. for The Detail, hosted by Kathy Antunes.
And don't forget to check out the live music, public affairs, and other special events at Fogartyville on Lemon Lane, just 6 blocks north of Main Street here in Sarasota.
Right now, stay tuned for Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! At 10 a.m.
Our theme music is Vicky's Vamp, composed and performed by John Lambie. Oh.